WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My guest is film director Jill Godmillow. She's best known for her documentary film Antonia, Portrait of a Woman, which she co-directed with Judy Collins. Her first feature film is called Waiting for the Moon. It's the next presentation of American Playhouse on PBS. It's based on the lifelong relationship between Gertrude Stein and Alice B. Toklas. In the style of Stein's own writing, the film sets out to invent what might have happened between Stein and Toklas during the summer of 1936. Godmillow told me why she wanted to make a film about Gertrude Stein.
I'm a big Stein fan. I've read her for years and years and years. I think she's, I would go so far as to say she's, for me, the most important innovator in the English language in the 20th century. I think everyone who's writing today in anything close to postmodernist is really in her legacy. And she's the one who opened the language, who really changed the way you could write. So there was always that. Then there was a strong fascination with the life, the living. In some way, they were the first bohemians. And I think that in particular, the thing about that was that she so unabashedly and with such good humor, with no announcements or labels of the life she chose to lead, lived it to the fullest extent, happily in a single relationship with another woman, with no fanfare and no urgency and no guilt and no statements to be made, just chose a life and lived it well. And that's pretty unusual.
Did you read a lot of Gertrude Stein's work in preparation for doing the movie?
I reread everything, and in fact, the film was not researched at all beyond reading Stein. We weren't interested in secondary sources or what so-and-so said about her.
Most of the incidents in the film are invented. The main characters are based on the real Stein and the real Toklas, but the incidents right. that you've given them are, for the most part, fictionalized. Why did you want to make up the incidents, just totally make them up for the movie?
That's a good question, because in fact, it never occurred to us to do the other, which is the traditional, the biography, the docudrama. And we wanted to make a film that took its meaning, not from the record, but because it had a proposition to make. It said, could this be Gertrude and Alice? Is this what they would have been like if this happened to them? And so it was never in our thoughts to remake Gertrude Stein in cinema. I think cinema and history are completely enemies, as soon as you cast a Linda Hunt for an Alice B. Toklas, you're outside of history. And as soon as you decide it's 90 minutes and it needs a beginning, middle, and end, you're outside of history. You've narrativized something that was not narrative.
Usually in a film about famous people, the more famous actor or actress plays the more famous person in the movie. Mm-hmm. And in this case, Linda Hunt, the more famous actress in the film, plays Alice B. Toklas, who's the less famous between Stein and, right. and Toklas. Right. How did she end up in that role?
Well, in truth, we offered her Gertrude first. We thought we had to cast a Gertrude first because it was the harder casting, given that Gertrude Stein, much more than Alice, is sort of known photographically, and there is a certain cultural myth about her. Everybody has a few ideas about who this woman was. And Linda Hunt was my first choice. I couldn't imagine another American actress who I thought could play Gertrude Stein, that you'd buy it. And so we sent her the script, and she called immediately and said she was extremely interested in being in this movie and would meet with us. And she walked into the meeting, and her first words out of her mouth were, "You're not going to like this, but I want to play Alice." She had her good reasons.
What were those reasons?
She has played and been cast, for the most part, as what I call the other in cinema, that even though she's a woman, she has played the woman who is different than woman. And I'm talking about cinema language, now cultural language. She's, in fact, played a man. She's played a doctor in the Bostonians, the only woman in a Western town. In other words, smart woman or genius and all that is other in our society, and she was interested in playing the more feminine role, the wife role. It's something she had never had a chance to do, and I think just for career reasons, it was important for her to play a woman. There are very few roles for her in the cinema, and that's a statement about the American cinema. But she certainly can carry a feature film. But she had to, I think, show that she could play that as a woman, not as a freak.
How far along are you?
Don't get them out of order.
Why don't you just number the pages?
I will when I'm finished. If I number them now, you'll just want to add a page, and then I'll have to renumber everything.
What if they get misplaced?
They won't, unless you move them.
A gust of wind might sweep through.
One already has.
I'm not so sure about this part. What do you think?
We've been through this before. It's fine.
I'm tired of typing.
I don't mind typing. It's the retyping. One grows tired of seeing the same sentences pass by over and over again.
Art is a struggle for us all.
For some more than others.
Stein and Toklas were lovers, and that's pretty widely known. But you had to decide when you were directing the movie whether you'd have any sexual aspects of their relationship shown on screen. How did you decide to handle that?
There was a little bit of thinking and rethinking and rethinking about that. It's quite clear that there would be a desire on the part of the audience to have the nature of their sexual relationship, if there was any, confirmed by a gesture or a shot or a... And in fact, in cinema, that's very easy to do. One shot of the bed that has two depressions in it as opposed to one would have been a sign to the audiences, oh, yes, they sleep together, therefore I know who they are, they're lesbians, and therefore the film is about two lesbians, and therefore the problems that they experience in the film are the problems of lesbians. And exactly for that reason, I refuse that gesture, and I refuse the kiss or the shot where both of them are in the same bed. It's a statement about our culture, really, that you can't make a film where you show two women in bed without the primary identity of those two women being lesbian, and it seemed exactly the wrong thing to do.
This is your first fiction feature film.
Right.
What kinds of new problems did it create for you? I don't mean disaster problems, but problems to solve as a filmmaker. Things that you had to learn how to do that you didn't have to confront in documentaries.
I'd say it's completely different. The process is different. The biggest problem for me was there's no time to think. When you make a documentary, you're able to raise some money, you shoot some, you look at what you've shot, you figure out what its meaning is, you raise some more money, you go in a different direction, you keep developing ideas, you keep developing structure as you go. And in dramatic film, there's this thing called the script, which is a model for the finished film. All the creative work is really done around that script and in the preparation of the shooting, in the casting and the choice of locations. And then it feels like finally the money's in place, finally everyone's assembled, bing, a gun goes off, and you go. And there's the schedule, and it says you shoot these three scenes this day, and you do. Because the actors are going home in 3 weeks, or because you have to, because there's no more money, and it's out of control. You're making myriad decisions every day that are intersecting at certain points, and you're not sure about any of them, but you've got to just keep making them. So it's radically different, and then suddenly it's over. That was pretty frightening, you know. I'm sure one gets to feel less overwhelmed by it, but, you know, the third, fourth, and fifth film. But that was quite a different experience than working and developing an idea through a documentary.
Do you plan on doing more feature films, fiction films?
Yeah, I'm up for some more. I've been trying to understand my own instinct to make more, because it's kind of horrifying. It's not fun, really. Bergman used to check himself into a mental hospital after every film, and now I know why, you know. It's hair-raising. And that process and that schedule tends to make you want to not take the chances that you should take. I mean, it's very hard to do something radical in that production system. You suddenly understand why there are millions of hacks in the business and why you see film after film that looks like 10 films you've seen. To do the radical thing in that situation is very, very difficult.
Well, I wish you good luck, and thank you for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Director Jill Godmilow's new film is Waiting for the Moon. It's the next feature on Public Television's American Playhouse series.